From NPR News, this is live coverage of the Florida primary. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Audie Cornish. Governor Mitt Romney scores a decisive win in the Sunshine State tonight.
A competitive primary does not divide us, it prepares us, and we will win.
Governor Romney pushed back the post-South Carolina surge of former House Speaker Newt Gingrich in a contest that turned increasingly negative on the airwaves. Now his sights are set on another election against the president.
Mr. President, you were elected to lead. You chose to follow. And now it's time for you to get out of the way.
We'll break down the voting with analysis from across the state, and we'll look at how this changes the dynamics for upcoming contests.
It's special coverage of the Florida primary from NPR News. Joining us in the studio is NPR's Mara Liasson, our national political correspondent. Mara, talk to us a little bit about this issue of money, because the candidates didn't complain so much about Mitt Romney's money going into, say, Iowa and South Carolina. And in Florida, it seems like it really just was a problem.
Well, it wasn't that it was a problem. It was that it was a decisive advantage for Romney. He's always been the best funded, the best organized. He's really the only candidate who had a soup to nuts campaign, well thought out. He had, you know, a real campaign. There was nothing fly by night about it or done by the seat of his pants. And all of his formidable resources came to bear in Florida. And he spent, five times as much money on the air as Newt Gingrich did. And he really swamped Gingrich with negative ads. And they worked. At one point, there were 13,000 television ads on Florida from Romney and 200 from Gingrich. And you heard Andy Koha talk about the exit polls, which I thought was also very interesting, that of the 39% of voters who said that advertising mattered to them when they made their mind up, Romney won that group 52 to 29%.
And were there any voters that stuck out for you in the exit polls that surprised you in how they reacted to Gingrich or Romney?
No, I think Romney had a very broad across-the-board win. Florida is a battleground state. That was Florida's whole argument for why it had to move up in line, even at the expense of some of its delegates. Florida has a more diverse population. Even its Republicans are more diverse than in a state like Iowa or South Carolina.
NPR's Mara Liasson. Thanks so much, Mara.
Thank you.
About 45 minutes ago, Mitt Romney stepped before his supporters at his campaign headquarters in Tampa, gave a speech, and Ari Shapiro was there to hear it. Ari, the governor sounded, he made reference, not by name, but he alluded to his Republican rivals and talked about how this contest will only prepare the Republican Party for the general election campaign.
Right. There has been a lot of talk and some poll numbers showing that this brutal primary in Florida really kind of hurt Mitt Romney. According to a Washington Post ABC News poll, his favorability rating among independents dropped from a high in the mid-40s last fall to down around 23% today. And so Romney in his victory speech seemed to try to counter that trend, saying Democrats like to comfort themselves with the thought that a competitive campaign will leave us divided and weak. He said, "I've got news for them. A competitive primary does not divide us. It prepares us, and we will win."
If indeed Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum and Ron Paul all stay in the race, is the Romney campaign so well-funded that it could respond with advertising elsewhere in the season the way it did in Florida?
They have money and infrastructure that is just unparalleled. You can't compare the other campaigns to the Romney campaign in terms of, as Mara was saying, just the kind of levels of preparation they have built up. For example, a couple of weeks ago, one of the main key Romney staffers sent reporters a list of upcoming primary and caucus states where some of the people remaining in the race have not qualified to compete. You know, Virginia is one example that got a lot of attention, but there are other states as well. This is a campaign with a lot of money. Now, that said, there are strong interests in some parts of the Republican Party in keeping people like Newt Gingrich in the race, and so we may yet see him get more infusions of money. Doesn't happen to be there right at the moment.
That's NPR's Ari Shapiro, who is at Romney headquarters, and sounds like there's still a lot of people there with you.
Oh, yeah. They've got drinks, they've got T-shirts for sale, there's a party going on. It's the first state Romney has won where he didn't have a house in the state, where he wasn't governor of the neighboring state, so it's a big night for him.
Okay, Ari, thanks a lot.
All right, take care.
And Mara, looking at, I guess you heard Ari talking about sort of the buoyancy of the Romney campaign, but is there any sense of what this means for Romney going forward? Does this really propel him through all of these caucus states?
Well, I think this gives him a big burst of momentum. I mean, don't forget, before we started voting, he looked like he was the all but virtual nominee. And I would say that although Newt Gingrich can cause him some trouble, because if he doesn't drop out of the race, it's hard to see where Newt Gingrich actually can win in a way that would deny Romney a majority of delegates. There are caucus states coming up. That's where candidates like Rick Santorum and Ron Paul, who have a good grassroots organization, and Newt Gingrich think they can do well. But the next group of states are very Romney-friendly: Nevada, Arizona, Michigan, where Romney was born. And even when you go to Super Tuesday in the South, where that would be the place that Gingrich would look for some wins because he's from the South, Super Tuesday is like a national primary. You have to have a lot of money to spend on TV in a lot of states at once. And in Virginia, Gingrich's own home state, he couldn't get on the ballot. And that tells you something about his campaign.
It tells us tough times for Gingrich going forward in the next few weeks. We've got more analysis at our website, npr.org. You're listening to special coverage of the Florida primary on NPR News, where, as we said earlier, the winner is Governor Mitt Romney, second place to former House Speaker Newt Gingrich. From NPR News, this is special coverage of the Florida Republican primary. I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Robert Siegel.
Thank you tonight for this great victory.
Mitt Romney is the winner in Florida. About a half an hour ago, he spoke in Tampa in front of a cheering crowd.
In that speech, Romney focused his criticism not on his Republican opponents, but on the man he hopes to defeat in November.
You know, like his colleagues in the faculty lounge, who think they know better, President Obama demonizes and denigrates almost every sector of our economy.
Mitt Romney's victory in Florida is decisive. Returns are still coming in, but he appears to have beaten Newt Gingrich by double-digit margin. Here to talk to us, or speaking to us actually by phone from Orlando, Florida, is the co-chair of Mitt Romney's Florida Advisory Council, Mr. Phil Handy. Welcome to the program.
Good evening. Happy night.
Now, you were a former advisor to Mr. Jeb Bush. Any reason why he hasn't quite endorsed yet?
Well, I think tonight Governor Romney showed that he could win all sectors of the electorate, and Jeb and all the other Republicans will be on board when we become the nominee.
Mr. Handy, can you talk a little bit about what the path forward is for Mr. Romney and for Republicans to win Florida in November?
Well, the path forward is we go to Nevada tomorrow and begin the campaign in the caucus states that are in front of us, the four states that will
and
be in the next week.
Mr. Handy, I'm sorry to cut you off. We actually see Newt Gingrich taking the stage in Florida. If you hold on with us one moment.
Sure, you bet.
To all of you. I also want to introduce my daughter, Kathy, and her husband, Paul. They live down in Key Biscayne. And I'm very proud of Kathy because she did a whole series of Spanish language media over the last couple of weeks, helping us in the Miami area and really reaching out across all of the Hispanic community. And also my daughter, Jackie, and her husband, Jimmy, who are here. Jackie's been doing speeches, doing television and radio, and as many of you know, she is the she and Jimmy are the mother and father of my two major debate coaches, Maggie and Robert. So it's great to have them here. I want to thank Floridians. Chris and I talked about this, and everybody here has been so positive in every part of the state that we just thank all of you for the hospitality and the kindness. We thank the well over a half million Floridians who voted for us. And I think Florida did something very important, coming on top of South Carolina. It is now clear that this will be a two-person race between the conservative leader, Newt Gingrich, and the Massachusetts moderate. And the voters of Florida really made that clear. Now, you'll notice that a number of folks are holding up a sign about 46 states to go. We did this in part for the elite media because, you know, the same people who said I was dead in June and July and said I was gone after Iowa, who seemed totally quiet the night of the South Carolina victory, are now going to be back saying, what's he going to do, what's he going to do, what's he going to do? So I just want to reassure them tonight. We are going to contest every place, and we are going to win, and we will be in Tampa as the nominee in August. Now, you might ask, in the face of a 5-1 onslaught, how can that be true? And I'll give you the answer. It was stated at a historic moment in 1863 in dedicating our first national military cemetery by the President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, who said, we have government of the people, by the people, for the people, and we're going to have people power defeat money power in the next 6 months. And you might say, how are we going to do that? Well, the same way that we came back in June and July, and by December, we're ahead in the Gallup poll nationally by 12 or 13 points with no money. It turned out that if you have ideas and you have solutions and you're positive and you can communicate a better future and you have a history of actually doing something in the past, that the combination begins to reach the American people. So let me talk briefly about what this is going to be about, because this is the most important election of your lifetime. If Barack Obama gets reelected, it will be a disaster for the United States of America. Make no bones about it. If he can have a record this bad, unemployment this bad, deficits this bad, policies this bad, gasoline prices this high, and still get reelected, you can't imagine how radical he'll be in his second term.
That's right.
So designing and putting together a people's campaign, not a Republican campaign, not an establishment campaign, not a Wall Street-funded campaign, a people's campaign, and saying to every American of every background and every ethnic group and every community, we have a better future for you and your family. It's a future of jobs. It's a future of lower gasoline prices. It's a future of a balanced budget. It's a future of a smaller Washington. It's a future of more power back home to you and your family and your neighborhood. This is the future we ask you to join us in imposing on the establishment in Washington and imposing it on both parties. So let's talk briefly about the power of ideas. In 1980, I was very honored to be able to help put together the first Capital Steps event. And at that point, Senate and House candidates came together with Governor Reagan. David Broder wrote about it in the Washington Post as a very courageous decision by Reagan because he didn't have to run as part of a team. And he did something nobody had done before. And we won 6 U.S. Senate seats by a combined margin of 75,000 votes, and we picked up 33 House seats. In 1994, building on that experience, we got 350 candidates to come and to be part of a contract with America to stand on the Capitol steps. We offered a positive program, and we had the largest one-party increase in American history in an off year. 9 million additional Americans voted for a positive vision, and we kept our word, and every item in the contract was voted on in the first 93 days. There's a core question, both in the primaries and in the general election. It's a simple question. If you're comfortable with the way America's decaying, then we don't have to change much. We can just manage the decay. But if you think that's a terrible thing to do to your children and grandchildren, It's a terrible thing to do to your country. And if you are prepared to do what it takes to make sure that we change direction, not just the presidency, but the Congress, the bureaucracy, the judges, the policies, so that the entire system gets on the right track, so that America can give our children and grandchildren a more prosperous, a safer, and a better future. This is how big the gap is. There are folks over here in both parties who are quite comfortable managing the decay. I am running, close to I made the decision of running. Our children, our son-in-law has joined us in that decision because we believe it is cheating our grandchildren to not insist on fundamental basic change in Washington, even if the establishment doesn't like it. In the next few days, we're going to develop the equivalent of the contract from 1994, except this is going to be a personal one between me and you, because I'm asking you to make me president. Therefore, I have a personal responsibility. It's going to come in two parts. Part one is conditional and requires your help. Part two I can do if I win the election without having to condition it. Part one only works if you help me and we run a team campaign. Which means, by the way, we have to replace Bill Nelson with a conservative. But if you help us, in addition to winning the presidency, we elect a Republican Senate and a Republican House, I will ask them on January 3rd to stay in office, and I will ask them to immediately pass the repeal of Obamacare. I will ask them to immediately pass the repeal of the Dodd-Frank bill, which is killing housing, killing small business, and killing independent banks. And I will ask them to pass the repeal of Sarbanes-Oxley, which is crippling American businesses with no net profit. And my goal is to have all three bills sitting there waiting so the minute I am sworn in, I can sign all three, and we're off to a pretty good opening morning. Now, those three promises are conditional. We have to win the Senate by a big enough margin to manage it, and we have to increase our strength in the House. Help me do that. I'll do those three. Now, let me tell you some things, and we're going to put this together in a way that you'll be able to see in writing with my signature, and you'll be able to hold me accountable. There are a series of executive orders I can issue that the Congress can't stop as long as they're within the law. The very first executive order will abolish all of the White House czars as of that moment. We will issue immediately an executive order on the same day. All this is going to happen about 2 hours after the inaugural address. Okay? And no point in hanging out and having fun. Before we get to go to the various balls that night, we are going to have a work period, because this is going to be a working presidency. I may not get in as much golf as Obama, but I'll get in a lot more job creation. And I'll tell you up front, I'm not going to compete with Obama in singing, because I'm not running for entertainer-in-chief. I'm running for president. And I would say to him now, Mr. President, you cannot sing your way past the disaster of your presidency. Now, we will immediately — you know, I forgot my teleprompter. I said to my staff earlier — I mean, I'm having to wing this because of a staff failure. So, we're going to sign on that day the authorization for the immediate deployment of the Keystone Pipeline as of that day. My message to the people of Canada is don't cut a deal with the Chinese. Help is on the way. By January, you're going to build the right pipeline to the right place. I'll just give you a couple more. We're going to put together a package. You're going to see this is what a serious conservative president is like, who is bold and is prepared to change Washington despite the screams of the establishment in both parties. So a couple more steps. We will, on that day, sign an executive order that will instruct the State Department that day to open the embassy in Jerusalem and recognize Israel.
The chant of Newt, 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 supporters of Newt Gingrich responding to his speech at his headquarters in Orlando. The former speaker has come in second in the Florida Republican primary. But Audie, to hear his speech, it's January 2013, and he's got the schedule of Inauguration Day down. What he's going to
veto
between the inaugural address and the balls, he's going to the inaugural balls, this, he's going to veto Dodd-Frank's, the Affordable Health Care Act, also known as Obamacare, and even the Sarbanes-Oxley law, which was the law passed after the Enron scandals to try to improve accounting of U.S. businesses. So that's a big agenda, abolishing all the White House czars, he said. He's a busy day that he's already got planned.
Yes, he has. For a former House Speaker, he sounds a lot like a freshman House Republican, if anyone remembers the last election, some of these themes. Mara, what are some of the things you heard in Gingrich's words here?
Well, first of all, I've heard Gingrich say that before. I've heard at many, many campaign speeches, he lays out the inauguration day, and before lunch they're going to do this, and after breakfast they're going to do that. I was surprised. I think this was a very important speech for Newt Gingrich. I think he didn't take full advantage of the opportunity. He's planning to go on till the end and to make this into an insurgent versus establishment campaign. There was a little bit of that, talking about this is now a two-person race. We have to shake up the establishment of both parties. We're going to go on to all 46 states. But he didn't lay out a clear and comprehensive argument about why Mitt Romney should not be the nominee.
Is that?
And I was surprised at that. I mean, he did at the beginning, two-person race against a real Reagan conservative against a Massachusetts moderate, but that was it.
I have a question for our observers, E.J. Dionne and Matt Continetti. Do you think it was intentional in that speech that Newt Gingrich just gave and when he attacked the establishments of both political parties and talked about not a Wall Street campaign, not a Republican campaign, but a people's campaign? Were we supposed to hear a little hint, a little bull moose vibe in that he might actually consider running outside the Republican Party?
I thought it was a good speech for Gingrich in light of his poor showing in the polls. He clearly had a lot of energy, and there weren't many people in the room with him, but they certainly became very spirited. I would say Gingrich is in a bind. He needs to break out from beyond the very conservative voters, of which they're very passionate in the Republican Party, but there aren't a majority of the party. He needs to break out from that group and attract some of these somewhat conservative voters. But in order to maintain his base of support among the very conservative voters, he goes and gives speeches like the one he just delivered, where he's hitting all the favorite conservative mm-hmm. buttons. And if you live in conservative land, where many of my friends are, and I vacation there sometimes, you listen to that speech, and oh my God, it's like manna from heaven. So so he's in that bind that he can please the conservative base all he wants, but it won't get him the nomination.
EJ?
I was really struck with the populist tone at the beginning. I don't think he's going to run as a bull mooser, although his language was actually Andrew Jackson, money power. That's
money
way
power.
Back
people
from
power
the battle
power,
against the Bank of the United States. He said, we're going to have people power defeat money power in the next 6 months. Now, number one, that's a message that Democrats were certainly glad to hear being used against Mitt Romney. And, you know, Matt's right. He is right now, at least in Florida, confined to the far right conservative corner, or the right, the not only far right, but the right end of the Republican Party. Perhaps a little populism could help him with some of the other voters. But I think the main thing is Newt Gingrich is really, really mad. Mitt Romney spent $16 million trashing him and trashing him again. And I don't think a mad Newt Gingrich is someone you really want having against you. And so I think he's going to stay for a while simply because he wants to bloody Mitt Romney for what Mitt Romney did to him twice now, first in Iowa and now in Florida.
Matt Cottinetti?
Yeah, more and more it seems to me that conservatism is an attitudinal thing. It's not what positions you hold. If you look at what positions Mitt Romney holds, he's as conservative as the next candidate. It's about how you express them, how you frame them, how angry you get at the establishment of both parties and such. And in that case, if that's the contest of conservatism, that's how Newt Gingrich is able to get those very conservative votes, even though in some ways he has just as many liabilities as Mitt Romney has.
Matthew Cottinetti, E.J. Dionne, thanks. Audie, a bit of news from our guys who have been looking at the vote tally, which is up to about 80% of all of the precincts reporting so far. And right now, the numbers aren't final, but extrapolating from what we've seen, it would appear that with more Republicans registered in Florida today than there were 4 years ago, turnout of Republicans will be less, about 45% compared to 51% in 2008. And it appears that the turnout might actually be about 100,000 votes fewer this year than it was in 2008. So not a good measure for the GOP to see less enthusiasm for the race than there was 4 years ago.
We're going to talk now to someone who could shed a little light on that topic from Orlando, Florida. We're going back to Phil Handy, the co-chair of Mitt Romney's Florida Advisory Council. Mr. Handy, how are you?
Hey, good evening.
We heard from the Newt Gingrich just a few minutes ago. People standing behind him had signs, pre-printed signs that said 46 more states to go. Are you guys ready for that?
Well, I think Governor Romney's speech tonight was very inclusive. We're ready to have all the other candidates, the other three candidates, come on aboard. Nobody who's ever won Florida has not gotten a nomination, and we as it was 4 years ago, I think it is today, that this is a very conclusive night.
At the same time, you just heard my colleague Robert Siegel talk about the slightly lower turnout, 45%, it seems like, on pace for this year versus the 51% that John McCain won in 2008. It seems like Mitt Romney is winning minds, not necessarily hearts.
Oh, I think, listen, that's a 4% decrease from 4 years ago. It's within the margin of error. I wouldn't read too much into a few fewer votes tonight.
But we are seeing from exit polls people saying that they're not settled on a candidate that they love yet.
Well, the voters at the end, as I'm sure you've reported, of the last-minute voters broke for Romney. Governor Romney won more than or about 50% of the Hispanic vote, laying the groundwork for, I think, the general election, which is very important. And obviously, he or the nominee would have to win Florida to be the next president of the United States.
That's Phil Handy. He's the co-chair of Mitt Romney's Florida Advisory Council and was the chair of John McCain's Florida campaign in 2008. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Dee. Good evening.
And the news out of Florida is that Mitt Romney is the winner and running a very strong first. Newt Gingrich came in second. Both those candidates have addressed their supporters in Florida. They're both looking ahead to the caucuses in Nevada next week. This is special coverage of the Florida primary from NPR News.
From NPR News, this is live coverage of the Florida primary. I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Governor Mitt Romney wins. Newt Gingrich vows to fight on.
It is now clear that this will be a two-person race between the conservative leader, Newt Gingrich, and the Massachusetts moderate.
It's special coverage of the Florida primary from NPR News.
We begin talking with Ron Elving, our senior editor, Washington editor. Ron, we heard Newt Gingrich trying to set this up as a race between a Massachusetts moderate and the true conservative. Is this argument convincing anyone based on what you've seen in Florida?
Mitt Romney said this is down to a two-person race, and Newt Gingrich said this is down to a two-person race. Earlier in the evening, we heard Mitt Romney saying there are three gentlemen still in the race. So there seems to be some dispute about the math.
About who's left.
And we do know this, that Mitt Romney very much would like to keep everybody in because they keep dividing the non-Mitt or the anti-Romney vote, and Newt Gingrich desperately wants to get this down to two people because he can establish that he is the more conservative candidate in the minds of many, particularly we saw tonight among those who call themselves very conservative. He is their preference. So if he can eliminate Santorum and Paul, not to say that he's going to, but if he could do that, at least in the minds of the voters, that would help him concentrate that vote, and that would be his best leverage against Mitt Romney.
At the same time, you can't help wonder about that strategy looking at Florida, where both Santorum and Ron Paul pretty much weren't competing. So, I mean, Gingrich had a situation where he could have played this out.
Thus it would seem. There were 20% of the voters in Florida who preferred someone other than Gingrich or Romney. About two-thirds of them wound up with Rick Santorum, even though he was pulled away by a family situation and not able to campaign there in the latter days. And Ron Paul still got his 7 or 8%, despite having had no presence really in the state at all, other than being in the debates.
Ron Elving, thanks so much. Robert?
A little while ago, Audie, a third-place finisher, Rick Santorum, spoke in Las Vegas. He said in Florida he stayed out of what he called the melee of negativism.
The American public does not want to see two or three candidates get into a mud, a mud wrestling match where everybody walks away dirty and not in a position to be able to represent our party proudly. We're going to have differences on the issues, and we need to talk about those differences on the issues. But what we saw in the last few weeks in the state of Florida is not something that's going to help us win this election.
That's Rick Santorum, who came in third in Florida, didn't campaign much there. He is in Las Vegas. He had a campaign event. You heard him there. And at that event was also NPR's Liz Halloran, who joins us now. What is the Santorum strategy that takes him straight to Las Vegas, straight to Nevada, skipping Florida?
Well, his message tonight, Robert, was interesting. It's Republicans can do better, and it's what he's been talking about for the last several weeks. As you played that clip of him talking about the mud wrestling, he sees a path to him that it's a little uncertain. He wants to go to Missouri, Colorado, Minnesota, do well there. He's doing some work here. But the Missouri primary next week doesn't really count for much, and he has some money. I talked to his campaign manager, Mike Biondi, tonight at campaign headquarters here in Las Vegas. And Mike said they've raised about $1.2 million. They're going to continue to focus on Missouri, Colorado, Nevada, Minnesota. They dismissed the notion that Rick Santorum can't do better in head-to-head matchups with President Obama, which shows him it's doing quite poorly nationally. And so they see this as a campaign that's going to go on. They didn't have the 46 more states sign on the stage tonight, right, but they certainly are saying they are going on.
Well, the next round where they go on is where you are right now in Nevada. Is the Santorum campaign strong there? Is it organized?
I would say no at this point. There are 28 delegates at stake here. Romney has been leading in the polls. There hasn't been a recent one, but he and Gingrich were 1 and 2 in the most recent poll that the Las Vegas newspaper did. Just a little note on the caucuses here in Nevada. In 2008, when Mitt Romney was running for president his first time, he won. And you have to note that here there is a strong Mormon influence in the Republican caucuses. The Mormons make up about 7.5% of the state population. Mm-hmm. However, a full 25% of GOP caucus voters were Mormons last time, and 94% voted for Mitt Romney. So he's got built-in strength here. He has money, his organization. We've heard ads on the air here since we've been here the last several days. Ron Paul has been here. He's got some ads on the air. Santorum doesn't seem to be much of a factor, although his campaign headquarters are packed tonight with some very excited people.
Okay, thanks, Liz.
Thank you.
That's NPR's Liz Halloran speaking to us from a Rick Santorum campaign event in Las Vegas. Santorum placed third behind the winner Mitt Romney and the second place finisher, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich. This is special coverage of the Florida primary from NPR News.
From NPR News, this is special coverage of the Florida Republican primary. I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Newt Gingrich's slogan tonight, 46 states to go. That despite his second place finish in Florida, far behind Mitt Romney. Nonetheless, the former House Speaker gave an optimistic speech earlier this hour, and he explained that slogan.
We did this in part for the elite media because, you know, the same people who said I was dead in June and July and said I was gone after Iowa, who seemed totally quiet the night of the South Carolina victory, are now going to be back saying, what's he going to do, what's he going to do, what's he going to do? So I just want to reassure them tonight. We are going to contest every place, and we are going to win, and we will be in Tampa as the nominee in August.
The victor tonight, Mitt Romney, also addressed his supporters earlier in Florida.
As this primary unfolds, our opponents in the other party have been watching, and they like to comfort themselves with the thought that a competitive campaign will leave us divided and weak. But I've got news for them. A competitive primary does not divide us, it prepares us, and we will win.
And when he did tonight, by double digits. To talk more about what Florida voters were thinking of, it's NPR's Debbie Elliott. She joins us from Pensacola, Florida. Hey there, Debbie.
Hey, Audie.
So what did you hear from voters today? Who did you talk to?
Well, you know, I'm here in the panhandle of Florida, in Pensacola, and this is a much more conservative part of the state than, say, Tampa or Miami or South Florida. And the voters here were split. If you look at the numbers tonight, it's pretty interesting. Romney and Gingrich actually tied in Escambia County, which is where Pensacola is. And so, it reflects a hope on the part of the Gingrich campaign and certainly the Gingrich supporters here that he can take his message of being the only true conservative in the race and go on to some of the other states coming up, in particular southern states, and do better. So there were not the gloomy faces here tonight that I expected.
Can you give us a sense of Florida panhandle politics? I mean, the state is very diverse, and sort of what are the dynamics up there?
Right. Like I just said, this is a much more conservative part of the state. It's a little bit more like Alabama or Georgia. There are a lot of religious conservatives here. Also here in the panhandle, in Pensacola in particular, and over in Fort Walton, there is a large military presence. So you have a lot of military voters. But what I found interesting today is a lot of the voters that I talked to, either they were very strong conservatives and said they were going to vote for Newt Gingrich, or they said, you know, I am a strong conservative. However, the economy is the most important issue for me. And every single person who said the economy was the most important issue ended up voting for Mitt Romney, including the owner of the establishment where I am tonight. I'm at Jerry's Cajun Cafe in Pensacola. And I talked to owner Jerry Mastrada, who just decided yesterday who he was going to vote for, and it was Mitt Romney. Let's listen.
I liked Newt at first, but he kind of went off the deep end a little bit. I hate the negativity. They should be focusing on what needs to be done with this country and what Obama's not doing, and focus on that, not on them beating up each other.
And Debbie,
a lot of frustration here with the tone of the campaign.
That was my next question. I mean, the onslaught of ads, the money that was poured in by Romney and his backers, it seems like that had an effect.
It certainly does. And in fact, the Newt Gingrich campaign folks here tonight were saying, well, we were just outspent. However, the campaign manager for Mitt Romney here said, well, there's a reason he was outspent. You know, if people are not willing to put their money into Newt Gingrich's campaign, maybe that ought to tell us something. So there was a lot of conversation here this evening about that very fact.
That's NPR's Debbie Elliott with voters in Pensacola, Florida. Thanks so much, Debbie.
Thank you, Audie.
And on the phone with us now from Orlando is Kathy Gingrich Lubbers. She is Newt Gingrich's daughter and a senior advisor to his campaign. She was president and CEO of Gingrich Communications for several years. Welcome to the program.
And thank you, Robert.
I'd like to ask you about what Debbie Elliott was just talking about, which is money. If indeed the Romney campaign demonstrated in Florida that it can outspend your father's campaign substantially, why isn't it likely to assume that they'll be able to do that in any other primary or caucus from here on in, and that Newt Gingrich is not going to be able to overcome that disadvantage?
Oh, Robert, thank you so much for having me on tonight. And I have to tell you, if it gets a little noise in the background, it's because we're in the midst of a celebration here in Orlando. And you should know that the money piece is simply this. We were outspent in South Carolina, and the people of South Carolina voted, and they voted loudly. And actually, money thing will change over time, as will the noise level, as will the success. And you know what? When the message that gets out that we have 46 states left for success to win, I am sure that the message that's important to most Americans, which has to do with the economy, and the fact that during my father's tenure as Speaker of the House, he helped increase jobs by 11 million, and the unemployment rate was down to 4.2. So
but
the economy are important, and it'll come back around.
But what we've seen in Florida was something like a 5-to-1 margin in spending on advertising. Advertising was overwhelmingly negative. Didn't seem to serve the party very well. But it certainly didn't help Speaker Gingrich at all. He couldn't get out from under it. When doesn't he have to raise more money and be able to spend more money, even if he would prefer the people's campaign that he spoke about tonight?
Oh, it's all going to happen. And, you know, the other thing is, realistically, whomever goes up against President Obama is not going to have as much money. So we actually need a candidate such as my father who can withstand the pounding, who can withstand the people raising more money and still have the wherewithal and the message that needs to get out, and be able to deliver that message to a lot of people.
I want you to clarify.
Actually, I'm sorry?
I want you to clarify your father's position on future debates right now. We don't know when the next debates will be.
Gosh, you know what? I think the next debate is not until maybe the third week in February, so it's a little ways from now.
And if reporters are the moderators, or broadcast journalists are the moderators of that debate, will he take part or will he not take part?
I think he's going to continue to do the debates as he has, and I think he's going to be very vocal and very active and very positive. And as far as money raising, we've had a very successful January. We've had a very successful run-up in regards to money raising. You know, we can't do maybe perhaps Mitt Romney does, but in the money pool, but you know what? We have the message that needs to get out, and it will. And that's what's great about this race.
Okay.
American people are loving it.
Okay, thank you very much for talking with us tonight. That's Kathy Gingrich Lubbers, who's working on her father's campaign, who says the American people are loving it, Audie.
And speaking next from the Romney camp is Congresswoman Ileana Ross-Leitanen. She is a Romney supporter who also represents Florida's 18th Congressional District. Welcome, Congresswoman.
Hey, Audie, how are you doing?
Good.
Very happy to be on. Thank you.
You sound cheerful, like most Romney supporters we've talked to tonight.
It was a great, it was a whole great week, culminating in this fabulous election where you look at all the crosstabs of the electorate, and it seems like he won with just about every major group. I'm mostly happy that in South Florida, where I'm from, Miami-Dade County came out really strong, and that's thanks to a lot of Cuban-American support as well for Mitt Romney. That was wonderful.
And you talked about Cuban-Americans, but moving forward, how can Republicans counter whatever can you talk a little bit about what the messaging was to Latinos in this election and how it could change moving forward in the general election?
Well, every messenger has his time, and I think that the messenger of Mitt Romney, of strong economic background, private sector experience, met its time. He had that 4 years ago, but people were looking at other factors, and John McCain bested him in my home state of Florida, and that was the end of Mitt. This time around, he still continued with his message, and it really resonated with the voters. Because
but on issues like immigration, it's been much more nuanced or complicated, and it seems like some people question this message and what it means for the relationship with Latino voters going forward.
Well, he keeps doing very well with the voters, no matter where he is. And of course, Florida is the first state that really has a sizable population of Latino voters. But then he heads out to Nevada, to Arizona, where there are more Hispanics, more Latinos, and we'll see what the impact is there. But I think that we've seen that Floridians are very tuned in to the economic message. 38 months of job loss under Obama administration, and they want a difference, and they want a change, and Mitt has got the right message at the right time.
Congresswoman Ileana Ross-Layton, and thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much, Artie. Thank you.
Well, we've heard from a Republican who supports Mitt Romney and from a Republican who supports Newt Gingrich, her father. Now we're going to hear from a Republican who hasn't announced his choice. Mark Roscoe is the former governor of Montana, former chairman of the Republican National Committee back in the early 2000s. He's at home in Big Fork, Montana. Welcome to the program once again.
Well, thank you very much, Robert. It's a delight to be a part of it.
You haven't endorsed a candidate. Do you want to do that now?
No, okay. I don't think so. Not at this particular moment, at least.
What is it that one of them lacks that doesn't compel you to do so?
Well, I don't know that any of them lack anything specifically. I've just been watching very carefully, and I'm trying to discern as much as I can. And
Does this hurt? Does 10 days of mutual negative advertising, not really mutual, most of it was Romney against Gingrich, very negative advertising, does it hurt the party?
Well, I think that, as Mitt said tonight, it prepares us. I don't think that a competitive primary divides us either. I do think that, obviously, in this day and age, that things get sharp and edgy. But no, I don't think that at the end of the day that it takes away from our capacity to form up as a team and to go on with a candidate and be energized and ready for the general election.
But if people do remember, these do drive down the positives of candidates who may even win in a campaign when they've done a lot of negative advertising, but it tends to also take some of the shine off them. Isn't that true?
I think that you could say that about both parties, to be very honest. I think that a great deal of shine is taken off of the process, and it's, I think, magnified significantly by the electronic age that we live in. Everything is dependent upon speed being a first consideration rather than accuracy, and that's true in virtually every sphere of human existence. And I do think that these campaigns are edgy, and they are edgy on both sides, and I think the American people have come to the point to where they would hope for more constructive dialogue virtually every place. But that's not a Democratic or a Republican Party problem. It's a problem with the process.
Has the proliferation of debates in the Republican primary season, has it been hurtful or helpful to the party?
I think that debating is always helpful. I do believe that the American people make a judgment on the basis of those who are standing before them and arguing their cause and contrasting their position. Mm-hmm. So I do believe that the debates are helpful. I know that they may get somewhat repetitive to people that pay very, very close attention. But I can recall when I was involved I debated 33 times. And frankly, even though I was tired of it, mm-hmm. there were still people that were there and listening and comparing. And
yep.
So I think at the end of the day, the dialogue is very, very important to our way of life and our process.
Well, Governor Roscoe, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you kindly.
Mark Roscoe, former governor of Montana, former RNC chair, speaking to us on special coverage of this Republican primary from Florida from NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight nearly 500 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
From NPR News, this is special coverage of the Florida Republican primary. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Audie Cornish. And as we wrap up our coverage, here are the Republican candidates in their own words.
Florida's GOP voters gave Mitt Romney a decisive win tonight. In his victory speech in Tampa, the former Massachusetts governor touted his credentials as a ticket to the White House.
My leadership cut taxes 19 times and cast over 800 vetoes. We balanced the budget every single year, and we kept our schools first in the nation. My leadership will end the Obama era and begin a new era of American prosperity.
Newt Gingrich finished a distant second in Florida, but in a feisty speech tonight in Orlando, he promised a comeback.
And you might say, how are we going to do that? Well, the same way that we came back in June and July, and by December, we're ahead in the Gallup poll nationally by 12 or 13 points with no money. It turned out that if you have ideas and you have solutions and you're positive and you can communicate a better future and you have a history of actually doing something in the past, that the combination begins to reach the American people.
And on to the third-place finisher, Rick Santorum. The former Pennsylvania senator is in Nevada tonight, which holds the next nominating contest. He said his campaign will stay focused on the issues.
We need a candidate who can get up on the issues of health care and draw a clear contrast with President Obama. We need someone who can get up on the issue of cap and trade and government using environmentalism to be able to crush the businesses of our country and draw a clear contrast with President Obama. We need someone on the issue of Wall Street and the bailouts and all of the...
And finally, Congressman Ron Paul, also in Nevada tonight. Despite finishing fourth in Florida, he and his supporters were as energetic as usual.
You know, a few months ago, there were, well, how many candidates were there? There were nine. We're down to four. But tonight I saw a statistic. We're in third place when it comes to delegates, and that's what really counts. And we've only gotten started. Now the counting really occurs.
It's Texas Congressman Ron Paul this evening. Now we're going to hear some summary thoughts here about what's happened in Florida today from our senior editor, Ron Elving, who's in the studio, Michael Dimmick from the Pew Research Center, and our reporters who've been at Gingrich and Romney headquarters this evening. And let's start with Ron. Ron, what's the lead on what happened today? What's interesting here?
Let's remember that there are some numbers here. Mitt Romney won apparently 46% of the vote. That's the way it's running right now with 82% of the vote counted. Probably some of the areas still to come in will narrow that margin slightly. But it appears from that number and from exit polls that he has won 46% to 32% for Newt Gingrich, about one-fifth of the voters preferring somebody else, two-thirds of them preferring Rick Santorum over Ron Paul.
And Michael Dimmick at the Pew Research Center, what are the voters that you see Newt Gingrich has to work on coming out of this race?
Well, he's got to broaden beyond the very conservative base. Right now, there's a core of the Republican Party that's not terribly satisfied with Mitt Romney. We've seen it in every state up until now. They've maybe coalesced a little behind Gingrich at this point, but that's not going to be enough. There are very few states where that's a majority of the Republican base, not to mention being able to take from that an appeal more broadly if he were to go on to a general.
And same thing with issues. Is there anything in particular we saw coming out of these exit polls that these candidates will need to pick up and run with?
Yeah. I mean, jobs is the issue. It's all about jobs in this election. You're seeing Obama start to triangulate his position on that. You're seeing all these candidates try to fight out how they're going to create jobs. Unfortunately, a lot of it is a broad stroke discussion. They're not getting into a lot of details because the details are a little bit tricky when it comes to that issue.
Let's hear from our reporters who've been in Florida, well, all week, but also today on primary day. First, Don Gagne, who is at Gingrich headquarters. You're in Orlando. I mean, do they really see this as the beginning of the next 46 states? Is there any pessimism there at all about the speaker's showing?
People will acknowledge that the speaker took a hit tonight, that his momentum, his chance to build on that South Carolina win just evaporated. That said, there's no love in this room for Mitt Romney, and no one here that I talked to was ready to say, okay, it's probably going to be Romney. We can start thinking about that now. They still want to take it to him. Interesting, though, that Gingrich did not take it to him in his speech tonight. Of course, he also didn't say that he had called him to congratulate him, nor did he kind of officially concede. But it was a speech that was more about Gingrich's vision and the things he will do once he takes office. And a lot of people here said they were glad to hear that after a week of really bare-knuckled campaigning.
And Ari, with the Romney campaign, you know, we didn't hear much in the way of concession speeches from any of these candidates. So is the Romney campaign ready to go a few more rounds?
Absolutely. They've been saying that from the beginning. I feel like the crowd here had always believed that their guy was the front runner who was destined to be the nominee. But after Iowa slipping through his fingers and South Carolina coming in far second place, tonight is the first real confirmation they got that this is a candidate who can win a state that is not right next door to the state he governed. That is to say, New Hampshire was right next door to Massachusetts. This was kind of it boosted morale in a way that was not just another mark in the win column for Romney. They really feel like this was proof of something, that he can go the distance and that he will be the nominee.
It sounds, Ari, as though Mitt Romney has almost been taking pride in the fact that he can go negative, that he can get tough. He's made a couple of remarks today talking about how tough politics is and how this is preparation and how if he's hurt, he'll hit back. He seems to be trying to tell everyone, I'm tough, I'm strong.
Sure. It was something that people loved about Newt Gingrich, and that was one of the reasons Newt Gingrich did so well in South Carolina, was that Republican voters, many of them this year, want somebody who's tough, want somebody who's angry, want somebody who's fiery and passionate. That wasn't Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney was the businessman, you know, stereotyped negatively as the guy with the silver spoon in his mouth and the ramrod straight spine. Well, in Florida for the last 10 days, he showed that he can throw a punch, and people seemed to really like that about him.
And Ron Elving, one can see what happened in Florida today as just continuing the spirit of the 2010 election year, when there was a phenomenal amount of negative television advertising.
That's right, and the voters say they don't like it, and there was a bruise on the banana for Mitt Romney in this particular result today, in that a plurality of the voters in Florida told exit pollsters they thought he ran the most unfair campaign of any of the candidates, a small plurality. About a fifth of those people still voted for Mitt Romney, and that's probably a small price for him to pay for the toughness that Ari was talking about. But we also saw apparently some drop-off in turnout in Florida, perhaps dropping below 50% as expected, maybe down into the mid-40s, maybe 100,000 fewer people voting than in 2008, despite some increase in their registration after 2010. Maybe that's a result of the negativity as well.
Despite one candidate, Mitt Romney, who says this is a battle for the soul of America, and second-place finisher Newt Gingrich, who insists this is the most important election of your lifetime.
And so it certainly is the most important election of his lifetime.
Of his lifetime. I think that's fair to say. Audie, that's it. We've seen the Florida primary come and go. And Mitt Romney, who seemed to be, you know, down on the canvas after South Carolina, has bounced back.
Definitely popped back up, and hopefully he's ready to go a couple more states, because it looks like the other candidates are ready to go a few more.
Okay. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Audie Cornish. You are listening to NPR's special coverage of the Florida primary, Republican primary, from NPR News.